Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
Building a culture and surrounding yourself with incredible talent, being the largest determinant really to success in any enterprise, is making sure that you have incredible partners and that you're incredibly open about all of your problems so that you can continue to grow personally and professionally.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Hello, Best Ever listeners. Welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Ash Patel, and I'm with today's guest, Carter Malloy. Carter is joining us from Fayetteville, Arkansas. He is the founder and CEO of Acre Trader, a land transaction and investment technology company. They work to improve the land transaction process for all parties involved, including investors, farmers, agents, and buyers and sellers of land. Carter's portfolio consists of row crops, permanent crops, and timberland. Carter, thank you for joining us, and how are you today?
Thanks. I'm wonderful. Appreciate you having me here.
It's our pleasure. Carter, before we get started, can you give the Best Ever listeners a little bit more about your background and what you're focused on now?
I'm here from Arkansas, where I live now today. So grew up in a farming family, spent about a dozen years in investing, most recently a partner at a large long-short equity investing firm on the West Coast. In the background of that, I've been buying and selling farmland, something I've always been passionate about, and realized at some point along the way that you can make a career out of this because there's trillions of dollars of it and a lot of folks that want to invest in farmland, and likewise, lots of farmers that want to grow their business alongside those investors.
How did you become passionate about investing in farmland?
We had a farm growing up as a kid and would go out there a ton and always enjoyed being on the farm, being outdoors. That sense of place that comes along with land and with land ownership was something that I really enjoyed. And as a professional investor, being able to invest professionally, but in something that you would make a hobby anyway, because it's just a lot of fun, really interesting. It's fun to go out and improve values of land. It's fun to work with farmers. I grew up in a hunting family, so fun to go out and hunt, or certainly used to be before I had a whole bunch of kids. But people like different things and they're weird. And mine happens to be big chunks of agricultural land.
Did you first buy land so you can have a place to hunt and ride and do outdoorsy stuff?
As much as I would love to tell you, no way, I'm a professional and it's all about the returns, it absolutely was a nice bonus that I could go enjoy the place.
How did you turn this into a business?
I had friends that wanted to invest, very simply. Other folks wanted to invest. And the reality is, and why you don't hear much about farmland and media a whole lot, is you've got to go out and plop down very serious money to go buy a bunch of acreage, probably in a county you've never been to. And then, oh yeah, now you get to manage a farm. For most people, that's a complete non-starter for a whole host of reasons. So the idea was fairly simple with building AcreTrader, was providing folks with a platform to go invest a small amount. So rather than going and buying a $1 million farm, being able to invest $15,000 or $20,000 in farmland and begin to get some exposure inside of your portfolio was the aim and remains for our business. Make that very, very easy for folks to participate in rural America.
Here's what I know about investing in farmland. Like you said, you can get it for about anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000 an acre. The farmers pay very little to farm your land, or you could do a share crop model where you get to share in their bounty or their losses. That's about the limit of my knowledge. So demystify that. Farmers don't pay a lot of money, and farmland is relatively expensive for the amount of rent or lease payments that you get.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth in that statement. So let me zoom out a little bit first and explain the very broad macro dynamic of farmland, which is we only have so much of it and it's shrinking. Something like 2 or 3 acres every minute, just in the United States, of farmland is lost. So we have this finite amount of this asset and it's physically going away. Yet we have more and more demand for the products coming off of that every single day as more and more humans are born. Yeah, something like 2 billion more people in the next 20 or 30 years. So very simple supply and demand economics would suggest that there is structural price improvement potential with what's coming off the farmland. So what that has led to, among other things, but a primary driver for farmland, is consistent appreciation over time. So for the last 30 or so years, as long as we have actual good measurement data, that has led to about an 11% annual return. That return is split between appreciation, so the improvement in value in that land, and the income coming off of it. In the case of row crop farming, as an example you suggested, that income is less than what you'd see at some other places. So call it cap rates of 3, 4, 5, maybe 6% in some places. Those are much smaller than what you're used to hearing in commercial real estate. But what's fascinating about farmland is the consistency. So if I look over a decade, 2-decade time span, the returns of farmland are somewhat close to commercial real estate, but with far less volatility. So those returns have been fairly consistent. Part of that's because we usually run unlevered. I sound like a crazy person, but we usually run without putting a whole bunch of leverage on there because we view farmland as a potential to be a part of your portfolio. You're accepting a stable, albeit somewhat lower return, but a much lower historical volatility profile. So all that said, that's a lot of words to say the risk-adjusted returns of farmland over the previous decades leading up to now have really stood out on a chart. The professional word for that is Sharpe ratio, right? It's really fascinating how that stands out relative to other asset classes.
11% annual return, and you don't use leverage. These are all cash purchases. Why don't you use leverage?
One, because the cash return profile is not as intense as it is in commercial real estate. This is a very general statement, right? But in the world of row crops in particular, you're leaning more on appreciation than income. And two is we tend to just run a little more conservatively in the world of farmland. That's part of the nature of what we're doing here is we want to be the opposite of crypto. This is not a get-rich-quick scheme. And you rarely hear people saying, I doubled my money last year in farmland. But I think you'll also rarely hear people say, I lost all my money last year in farmland.
What are the returns to investors?
That's the NCREIF, which is a private equity index for commercial real estate and farmland and timberland real estate. Is the best measurement index we have. And they do a great job, a ton of data there. And that information that I'm quoting is coming from their indices since 1990 or 91 as they've been recording it. So last 30 something years. And again, that's been the rough profile. If you look at it over a 10-year period or 20, 30-year period, it tends to be in that very low double digits, 10 to 12% type of range.
Okay, so that's fair. That's the return to investors.
Correct.
Okay, double digit returns. Can investors have full liquidity? Can they come in and out as they please?
The securities through which the investors invest tend to have a 5 or 10 year lifespan on them is typical. Sometimes that's a shorter duration. Sometimes it can be a little bit longer. Offering by offering, that can change. There is a 1 year minimum mandatory regulatory lockup on owning shares in these private vehicles. After 1 year, the investor can sell, if they'd like to friends, family, maybe even through other online platforms. And then we've been working for a long time on a secondary market ourselves as well. It's quite painful to be very forward about that, just the amount of regulatory hurdles and whatnot. We certainly would hope for a future where that's available as well.
Yeah, so no different than most other syndications. Carter, correct. Is there another profit upon sale that the investors get to share in?
Yeah, through the life of the investment, you're often going to have regular income coming off of that each year. And then upon exit, there's usually, I shouldn't say usually, you have the opportunity certainly to earn appreciation through the life of that as well. So two real ways that investors can make money: income coming off of the farm. And like you mentioned earlier, that can be rent, that can be revenue share, can even be profit share sometimes. And then appreciation over the life of that farm as well.
Have you had investments go full cycle?
We have. We've had probably 6 or 7. I think we've got several more that'll go full cycle later this year. Often that is because the farmer will see a bid that we believe is really attractive to those investors and presents an opportunity to pull forward some IRR. So we've got an investment committee here internally that evaluates any activity, whether it's acquiring farmland or disposing of farmland through our platform.
What were the returns to investors on those full cycle investments?
If you look across them, there are a couple of outside ones and large loss, a large similar type of gain. But the rest and the ones that the team's working on, the median there tends to be in a pretty tight band of low to mid-teens, call it.
What are the risks of these investments? Look, I'm naive, right? I'm thinking droughts, hurricanes, things that destroy farmlands. Is that a risk to investors?
Natural disasters can be a risk. When you think about how large the U.S. is, we're talking about hundreds of millions of acres here. It's absolutely overwhelming the amount of farmland there is out there. Weather volatility is a real risk. It's a real opportunity also. I'll give you the example of almonds in California. Something like 80% of the world's almond supply comes from California. And there are some water-threatened areas in California, certainly. However, there's also very sustainable long-term water. And if you think that water will continue to be a challenge, as we do, then there could actually be almond supply coming out in those water-challenged areas. So if you're sitting on good water, you could actually see price improvement there from that type of climate challenge that could come along. But beyond that type of a challenge, there are also the challenges and risks of the particular farmer you're working with, the particular farming area that you're in, the geography and crop type, soil type. In the South here, it's getting water up out of the ground onto the farm. In the Midwest, it's getting water off of your farm. So it varies quite a bit wherever you are in terms of the risk profiles. Really, one of the biggest risks is underwriting, is making sure that you get it right on the buy.
Now, look, if I'm an investor, I'm going to be skeptical. What if my particular investment is hit by a weather-related issue? What kind of risk is my money at?
Generally speaking, we think about the world split in OpCo and PropCo. Just as if you owned a building and you're renting to a pizza shop, if the pizza shop has a major operational issue, that doesn't necessarily affect you as the property owner. And that's a similar relationship that we have in the world of farmland, where the tenant farmer, which is often a partner in these deals, we can get into later. It's a really exciting part of our business. But that farmer is taking on more of the operational risk, generally speaking. So when we think about a corn farmer in the Midwest, they have real exposure to weather events, input pricing variability, labor cost, et cetera. They're running their own business on top of that farmland. They usually will have insurance on the crop. And interestingly, that is often government subsidized. So for us, in our world, they pay rent usually in March before they plant. So you see in the world of farmland, default rates and vacancy rates, if you're trying, surprisingly low. I think that I know of, we've done 140 farms in the last 5 years. 1 year we had one farmer tell us in March, which is way too late, hey, I'm not going to renew. We had a new tenant farmer on there within 5 days.
They pay an entire year's worth of rent in March?
That is usually the case. Sometimes, what you mentioned earlier, sharing in the crop, we'll use what's called a flex lease. And we really like this structure where you get a little bit less rent up front, and then you can participate in upside or downside alongside that farmer in the back end of the year. But generally speaking, if a farmer is paying rent, they're paying a large portion of that, if not all of that, before they ever put a seed in the ground.
We'll get back to the show with first some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. Deciding how to invest your capital is more challenging than ever. That's why it's never been more important to partner with a company with a solid track record and that has thrived through various economic cycles. Companies like BAM Capital. BAM Capital is a trusted multifamily syndicator that has delivered a historical average of over 35% IRR with an average hold period of 3.5 years. BAM Capital has never missed a preferred payment, never lost an LP's investment, and never called capital past the subscription amount. BAM Capital is currently raising capital for a fund designed for accredited investors, targeting a 15 to 20% IRR and a 2 to 2.5x equity multiple to its investors over a 3 to 5 year hold period. If you're an accredited investor and you want to learn more about multifamily investment opportunities with BAM Capital, visit capital.thebamcompanies.com. Again, that's capital.thebamcompanies.com.
Your timber business, can you describe that?
Yeah, it's a little bit different of an animal in that with farmland, we're producing a commodity each year off of that particular parcel. In the world of timberland, you're growing trees over long cycles. So maturity of a tree may be 20, 25 years before you want to harvest it and go replant. As an investor, what we try to look at within the world of trees is finding larger tree farms where we have varying maturity profiles so that you're able to harvest intermittently through the whole period, whether that's every 2 years or every 5 years. It's a little bit different. It's also different because you can just hold on to it. Lumber prices are bad this year. We don't have to sell anything. We can just let it continue to grow in value and size and sell next year. Another interesting differentiation in the world of timberland is that often what's coming off of there is the sale of trees. Those are long-term assets. Therefore, it can be treated as capital gains in many scenarios as opposed to ordinary income. So there can be a tax advantage with timberland as well.
Interesting. Carter, returns on timber versus farmland, are they similar?
They're fairly similar, maybe a little bit lower, maybe a little less volatility in certain years, though again, tax adjusted, maybe something similar to farmland. So we view them as fairly similar types of investments.
I resonate with what you said earlier in that farmland is diminishing. We aggressively look for farmland in the right locations where we can develop industrial. We just bought 80 acres of farmland and we're developing 1 million square feet of industrial space. With our best ever listeners, if they're looking to buy farmland, can you give us 2 scenarios in how to best find and buy farmland for development and also for cultivating farms?
So if you're looking at either of those, we have a really great tool we built called Acres. It lives at acres.com. And that tool is actually a really helpful guide to give you insights into local comparable sales, ownership, things like topography on that farm, productivity of that farm. It's a fun little side conversation within our business. Our world is full of information asymmetry. There is no CoStar. There is no big provider of data. There is no MLS. So we built our own. And less than a year ago, we decided to begin giving away a portion of that for free to let people use in hopes that some of them will come do business with us. And today, I think we've had over 150,000 signups on that software already. So very excited to provide that to the market and allow people to use that tool to do exactly what you're saying. I want to go understand what could be for sale in this area. I want to go learn who owns things so I can go try to buy or how productive this land could be.
Well, I've got to tell you, that deal is very lucrative. With all of your knowledge, why not find farmland that's in the right location to develop?
To put simply, it's just not what we do. We want to be a simple business and we want to have a conservative ethos around investing in long-term farmland investments. Look, if it happens to be in the path of development, that's great. That makes it an interesting component of any investment thesis, but we don't like to typically pay up for that. We like free options. Free options are always great. We don't tend to go speculate near areas of, hey, there could be development here, data centers built or residential expansion, whatever that may be. That's not to say that it's wrong. It's just not our core competency. And we like to stick to our knitting and try to get it right.
Fair answer. What's the minimum size of land you will acquire?
It depends on the region because, like you said earlier, an acre of land in Arkansas may be $7,000 and it may be $50,000 or more in California. Generally speaking, we look in the 100 or 200 range up to maybe a couple thousand acres on a per deal basis. So you could call that in our world, the lower middle markets. There's much more volume, much more opportunity there. And I'm frankly, really excited to be a participant there.
What's your bottleneck currently in terms of growing your business?
For us, I think the things that make us special as a company, or the things that are our unfair advantage, if you will, are sourcing and diligence. And it's because they're really, really hard to do in our world. Sourcing good opportunities at scale, looking at 1,000 deals a month, is hard to get the pipeline to bring those in. We've got a large team here doing that. And then understanding those once they come in and using data and analytics and real data science, and also real boots on the ground, local folks and our folks that bring mud in on their boots into our office, frustratingly, having the on the ground experience as well to make sure we understand each of these investment opportunities.
I'm assuming the level of competition that you face is quite low.
In terms of investors, it is. There's not a whole lot of investment dollars playing in our world. There's plenty of people buying and selling land. There's probably $100 billion of the stuff that trades hands every year. There is far more institutional interest in the asset class. They tend to play in much larger plots of land, so we don't tend to compete much there. But for some context, these numbers are a little bit dated, but a decade ago, it was $4 or $5 billion. Today, it's probably $40 billion. So there is real institutional money coming in. When you think about it relative to the entire asset class, though, it's less than 2%, which is pretty wild. When you think about office space or nursing homes or manufacturing facilities, industrial, those are institutionally owned. I don't know if it's 40%, 70% based on the sub-asset type, and we're less than 2% over here. So I do think you're going to see that trend continue.
Carter, throughout your real estate investing career, what's some of the hardest lessons that you've learned?
I think that, one, I personally, this isn't speaking to our company, but personally here, even well before AcreTrader, I tended to harvest gains too fast. As I think about being a professional investor in equity markets, you want to lock that in sometimes. And I've done that in the world of real estate, to the chagrin of partners who really wanted to exit large retail investment we had in a retail facility. And the mistake there was selling too early and taking a small gain instead of a much more material one. So that's a big one. Fighting the Fed is always a big one. Don't make any assumptions or think you know where interest rates are going to go. It's just a terribly difficult one. And in the world of equity investing, where I spent a lot of my career, I can go on for hours about the mistakes I've made. But that's probably another podcast.
Why are interest rates an issue for you now if you're not leveraged?
In our world, they are less of an issue. Debt to asset ratios in farmland are something like 14%. It's relatively tiny in terms of leverage in our world. So it's less so in this world, but around the question being commercial real estate in general and farmland, just presuming that one knows where rates is going to go is a really dangerous game. I think a lot of folks are learning that on floating rate resets in this very moment. Rates can be very scary when you're running hot with leverage.
Carter, what is your best real estate investing advice ever?
I think I just got it. Don't fight the Fed. I keep having to relearn that one in my career.
Carter, are you ready for the best ever lightning round?
Let's go for it.
All right. What's the best ever book you recently read?
In the world of business, I have another one in behavioral psychology called Think Again, but I want to hone in on a book called No Rules Rules, primarily by Reed Hastings, the founder of Netflix, and another person there as well. And it's really about building a culture and surrounding yourself with incredible talent, being the largest determinant really to success in any enterprise, is making sure that you have incredible partners and that you're incredibly open about all of your problems so that you can continue to grow personally and professionally.
And Carter, what's the best ever way you like to give back?
I really love where I live, Northwest Arkansas. So I spend quite a bit of time engaged in community efforts here. I sit on the executive committee of the Northwest Arkansas Council that really helps focus on some of the needs of our region here across a band of different philanthropical and commercial causes to help growth in the region and some of the real needs here.
Carter, how can the best ever listeners reach out to you?
AcreTrader.com is our investing website. I mentioned earlier acres.com. If you're looking at land and you want to understand land, is a really cool and powerful tool. And I'm on LinkedIn. I don't do much in the world of social media, but certainly through our business and our website, you can find me anywhere.
Carter, thank you for your time today. You've opened up the best ever listeners world to farmland and timberland that most of us don't have exposure to. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Best ever listeners, thank you for joining us. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a 5-star review. Share this podcast with someone you think can benefit from it. Also, follow, subscribe, and have a best ever day.
Hi, best ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the best ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access and you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.